All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. It's going to go quick today. It's Monday. We're only doing an hour. Looks like questions are starting to come in pretty heavy. But if you press one right now, we should be able to get to you. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything goes, go ahead and press one on your phone. We're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Oh, hold on, that was a false start.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority. Possible, so we're going to do that right now. Let's get started in Florida. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, I've got a question. I've got a newly installed OPS and wondering best way to use it. It's got a couple lights on it. Haven't pulled samples from it yet. Just as a little bit of a background, if it matters. I've got an 06379 with an ISX.
Got it. Okay. So it's pretty simple and straightforward. The lights, you're not going to use them very often. They're just an indicator of when the power is on, just so we make sure you can just do a quick visual and make sure you have power to the unit. And then the green light is when the heating element is actually on. So you have power to the unit, but the heating element will cycle on and off. And that's really all the lights are there for. I mean, you go years without ever looking at the lights or needing to, but that's what they're there to show power and to show when the heating element is actually on and heating. Other than that, pretty straightforward. We recommend if you're using the 10-inch filter, sample every 25,000 miles and change the filter. And then we don't change oil until there's something in the oil sample that tells us to. And we have, you know, at the extreme, I have some three or four trucks I know right now that have more than 500,000 miles on the oil. That's an extreme, but it happens. Average, you're going to change the oil probably somewhere between 100 and 200,000 miles.
Okay. How often are they refreshing the oil, I'm assuming? Changing the filters? What kind of PM schedule?
Yeah, well, we change the filter on the OPS and take an oil sample every 25,000 miles. As far as your other service, you know, do those whenever, you know, whatever your schedule is. And then as far as changing the oil, we only change it when the sample tells us to. And that's the whole point. We don't put a number on it. We don't put miles. We just watch the samples. And at some point, something in the sample will tell us it's time to change it. It might be too much soot. It might be fuel dilution. It could be the base drops too far. But if the oil, and that's the whole point of this, is that we don't change the oil based on a random number, because if you do that, most of the time you're either throwing away good oil or you're leaving it in too long. This way we use the oil as much as we can, but we never overuse the oil because we're going to change it based on the sample.
Okay. All right. Roger that. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing not to have to change oil every 15,000 miles. And like I say, the average truck makes it 150,000 miles, 200,000 miles, and then we usually end up changing. But I have many in the 2, 3, 400,000 mile range on the same oil. Let's go to Kansas. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I just wanted to see if you can look at my oil sample.
All right. Let me take a look and see what we've got here. Tell me a little bit about the truck. What year and what engine?
It's an 07 C15.
All right. Let's see. I'm looking at it right now.
There's a couple of
certainly
couple
nothing.
Numbers that they flag, and I don't know what it is.
Well, this is a really clean sample. This is just, it's a one, a level one, and I'm looking to see why they even flagged it at a level one. Viscosity's good. There's no fuel dilution. There's no soot. Now, this is just a really clean sample. There's nothing on here you need to be concerned about at all.
Okay. Well, very good. I just seen that they flagged two of them, the boron, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, those are what are called additive. Yeah, those are what are called additive metals. And every blend of oil has a little bit different additive package, even sometimes two jugs of the same oil. Will end up with slightly different numbers on the additive. And that's why they tend to get flagged. But in 25 years of looking at oil samples, the additive metals have never mattered. I almost wish they would take it off the sample because we just don't use it.
Okay. Okay, very good. And another question I have, I've been using the Dallow 400. And after I took the sample, I had to add some to it. I bought some of that CK4. Is that going to make any difference? Is that going to mess anything up?
Well, you'll get more of those readings on the additive metals because now that CK4 package has a different additive, different additive levels. But again, it doesn't matter. The additives are fine.
Okay.
All the oils are compatible. So, yeah, you'll be just fine with the CK4.
Okay, real good. That's what I was a little concerned about, but okay. And I also have a health question, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I have problems when I eat certain things like tomatoes or berries, anything, basically anything that's red. I have problems with hemorrhoids. If I quit eating that, that's going to go away.
Okay.
Why it's doing that?
Yeah, so any issue in the body, most issues, pain, swelling, inflammation, which is what hemorrhoids are, is a reaction to the proteins in food. Now, we'd have to identify, is it really red stuff? Is it possibly nightshades? We have a FIT test, which is a food inflammation test, which is what's happening here is your body is reacting to the proteins in you may have identified it, maybe it's red foods, I kind of doubt it, but the FIT test would absolutely identify and say, this is the food you're reacting to. And the way we fix that is we do what's called an elimination diet. We eliminate all the things that you're reacting to for 30 to 60 days, and we work on some gut healing. We recommend a lot of bone broth. We have a couple supplements that are really good for gut healing. And then after that, we go back and try to reintroduce those foods. And many times, it's the fact that you've got leaky gut, which we almost all have from all the gluten and wheat that was in our diet. So that leaky gut is what's allowing your body to react to all these foods. So what we do is work on fixing the leaky gut because that's really the cause of the problem. And then most times you're able to reintroduce those foods back in without a problem. So if you wanted to fill out our free NutriQ or if you wanted to go into one of our health programs, we could certainly work with you until we got that fixed. But that's something we could definitely fix. It's a food reaction. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. We are going to head off to Arizona. Frank, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Kevin. Two health-related items this morning. One for my wife. Well, both of them, actually, for my wife and I. She's in week two of a full ketogenic eating plan, and she was higher than a kite. In week one, she lost 2.5 pounds. She's gallbladderless. So I ordered Beta Plus and HCL from the store, and we started pretty much just following what's on the, you know, the bottle that says one pill each with each meal. The question is, you know, she went back up to the same number of the pounds of weight she started at, so she's a little bit down in the mouth today. But the question is, should we be cranking up? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you know what? We just had a technical issue. We're a first day on the road, so I'm always trying to get my equipment right. I'm going to start over. We're going to start the whole segment over. So hold on just a second. We're going to come back to all this.
Okay.
Okay. Let's try this again. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phones. We're going to get to Arizona this time. Frank, welcome to the program. It's your turn. Hold on. Looks like we just lost Frank. All right, so we're going to go to Louisiana. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I got an oil sample for you. When I got this truck here, I didn't pull one, but the blow-by was looking really good. I'm just curious what this looks like.
All right, let's get to that and take a look. What do we got here? So, all right, what year and what engine?
The 2012 glider. It's got the Series 60 12.7 in it.
Okay. And verify the mileage. Looks like about 640,000 on the engine and about 12,000 on the sample. Does that sound right?
That is correct. Yep.
Okay. Fuel dilution is good. Soot is good. Viscosity looks low. Why would the viscosity be so low? This is a 1540, just a straight 1540.
Yeah, Mobil Delvac, mineral oil, straight.
Huh. Everything looks really, really good, except the viscosity is just really low, and it shouldn't be. We don't have any real fuel dilution. Base is good.
Well,
there's hardly any wear metal. Viscosity, it measures the thickness of the oil. So a 40 weight is going to have a higher viscosity than a 30 weight. A 40 weight is thicker. A 540 will be thinner than a 1540. So the different weights on oils, when you see 10W30, 15W40, 0W30, those are all weights. And it's a weight. The first number is the weight cold, the thickness and weight of the oil when it's cold. And the second number is at operating temperature, roughly 100 degrees Celsius. So a 1540 should be in the range of about 14 on viscosity, and you're at 12.5. That's more like a 530. But there, fuel dilution can do that, but there isn't any fuel dilution. So every now and then you just get a batch of oil that the blend was a little off on it. It doesn't hurt anything. If your oil gets too thin, if the viscosity is too light, you can end up with wear metals. But I'm not seeing any wear metals, so you're fine there. This is actually a really clean sample. Everything looks great.
Okay, so when I put the OPS on here in about 3 or 4 months, I can go to semi-synthetic?
Yeah, or full synthetic, either one.
Okay, and then what fuel filter should I be putting on this? Because when I run the 5-micron one, I got to replace the filter every 7,000 miles.
Which filter unit do you have on there, a Davco?
Davco, yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't be clogging filters that often. Are you seeing any algae in the fuel?
Well, I treat for it, put one bottle in every 2-3 months. When I first talked to you about this truck, when I got it, I had snot in between the fins. Now, every once in a while, when I do the filter changes, I see little black flakes in there, you know, very tiny. But other than that,
yeah,
I don't see anything.
Changing the filter isn't, I think you're going to have to figure out the contamination issue here, whether it's algae or asphaltene. But something is clogging that filter prematurely, so you're going to have to figure out what that is and get that taken care of. I think we've got Frank back somewhere, so I'm going to go try to find him here. Nope, I'm not seeing him. All right, so we're just going to keep going down the calls, and if I run into him, we'll get back to Arizona. Rafael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I am getting ready, but I'm hoping by the end of the month I'll go on my own authority.
Okay.
I got it. Looks like everything's lining up. I did my taxes. I averaged $1.30 a mile. My percentage, I give this guy 38,000 for him to, for, you know, be leased on. And that made my big decision to go on my own.
Okay.
Then I was looking at factoring because I was thinking I might need factoring every other load. So the factoring people are, man, they're sure fighting for new outcomers. One of the factoring companies they offered me a 3.5 factoring. We factor with them. Is that a good number or?
Well, it's not bad. Now, are you familiar with the difference between I just drew a blank on the word. There's two different types of factoring, and I'll just explain what they are, and maybe the word will come back to me. Is this a recourse or no recourse factor?
This is no recourse factor.
That's a good rate for no recourse. Now, compared to most factoring, but it's not your best option. I'm going to give you another option, and here's where people get screwed up on factoring. They hear a rate like 3.5 and think that's fantastic because we are used to hearing rates like 8%, 10%, 12%. But those rates, when we talk about loan rates, whether it's a credit card, a mortgage, a car loan, and we say 10%, that's always an annual rate. But on factoring, you're not borrowing money for a year. You're only borrowing money for 30 days or so. So 3.5% actually ends up being like over 40% annual interest. Because 3.5% is for 30 days. You've got to multiply that by 12 to get your annual rate if you want to compare it. So it is a pretty good rate for non-recourse factoring. But if I offered you a credit card at 35% interest, would you take it?
No.
No, but that's what factoring is. This factoring is actually 40 plus percent interest. And we would never, ever charge money on a credit card if it was 40% interest. But people factor all the time and they don't understand that. They'll say, no, it's 3.5 or it's 5 or no, it's not. That's a 30-day rate. We have to multiply it by 12 to be able to compare that. So I tell people all the time, if you, instead of factoring, if you have the ability to go out and get a $10,000 credit card with a decent rate, just go do that. And put your expenses on the credit card until you get paid from your brokers. But now there's an even better option. Are you a member of, or have you looked at truckstop.com at all for the load board?
I've been hunting down for a couple load boards. I've been looking at DAT load board, and I was looking at that, the internet truck stop also.
Yeah, so Internet Truck Stop, and there's nothing wrong with subscribing to multiple load boards, you know, having two accounts or sometimes three. It depends on what kind of freight you're looking for. But truckstop.com has the best option I have seen for getting your money. It's called Load Pay. So Load Pay gives you tons of options, and it's way cheaper than factoring. You're still going to pay some fees, but you get to choose. Like, the faster you want your money, the more you're going to pay. But maybe 1 week you say, oh, I could wait 15 days on this load, then your fees are going to go way down. And you only factor the loads you want to factor. Like, when most factoring companies, when you sign that contract to get that 3.5 rate, you've got to factor all of your loads with them. And the beauty of Load Pay is you only factor when you have to, and you can get your rates way down.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to look into that one then.
Yeah, and it's all managed right through an app on your phone, so it's just a really great system.
Oh, okay. I'm going to look in more into Internet Truck Stop, then. I'm going to look at their way. Yeah, because I'm pretty excited now. I'm starting to count down so I go on my own.
Yeah, good. Well, that sounds exciting, and it sounds like you're doing it right. You're doing your homework. You're asking good questions. So check out, like I say, truckstop.com has a ton of tools available. Load Pay is one of my favorites. It's by far the best option I've seen. To get your money when you need it, but manage to keep your expenses down at the same time. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Arizona. I think we've got Frank back. Frank, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Kevin. So two
health-related questions. My wife is gallbladder-less. She's been on acid reflux medication for about 3 or 4 years. She's in week 2 of a full keto eating plan. And we started her off 2 weeks ago with, from your store there, Beta Plus and HCL. She's been taking the dosage that's on the bottle that says like one of each of those per meal. So she had some pretty good results. The first week she lost almost 3 pounds. And now she wants to blame it on the pills because she kind of gained the 3 pounds back. And I said, no. You know, time of day, different, you know, stomach conditions and everything else. Let's not panic. But the question is, with the, and she's still taking the acid reflux pill right now until we see some results from the Beta Plus and the HCL. The first question is, should we take a little bit more of one or both of those pills since she's got pretty definite, you know, digestion issues, and should we add something else?
Yeah, there's a couple things we might try here. So you said she's on a, is it an N-acid or a PPI?
Well, okay, so it's Nexium, whichever that falls into.
Yeah, it's a PPI. So we have a protocol for getting off of the PPI slowly, because we don't want her taking both for very long. I would follow that protocol and get off of the Nexium because it's just counteracting what the HCL is trying to do. You know, where you're just going to have to keep adding more and more HCL if you're still taking the Nexium. And if we stop the Nexium, then you're not going to have to take as much of the HCL. But we might also, when she finishes the HCL, we might she might want to try like a Hydrazyme, which is a combination of stomach acid plus enzymes. And we find if somebody doesn't really do well on HCL alone, they do better with the HCL and the enzymes. So, and the other thing is most people are not taking enough. So you can really, especially in the beginning, you can really kind of load up on these supplements and not worry about taking too much until you find that balance. So my guess is she could take a couple more of each and it would probably work better. But assure her, because you are correct, this had nothing to do with the weight. You know, when you said she lost 3 pounds in the first week, yeah, she probably did. But like you said, water alone can make your body fluctuate in weight by 3 or 4 pounds pretty easily. Just the difference in how high
water
you are.
She's hitting the water like you can't believe. I mean, she's really.
And that's good.
It's her only fluid. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's good. We want her to drink all that water, but we also don't want her to worry too much about what the scale says, you know, from day to day. Long term, if she's feeling better, many people notice that their clothes start fitting better before they really notice a lot of big weight loss. So just tell her to stick with it, play around with. Yeah, good. Tell her to play around with the digestive enzymes.
What I'm hoping for is after a couple of weeks, a good, you know, she's already having the good close response. You know what I'm saying? Is Kim is kind of aware of her and has reached out. We're going to get her into a plan. She's really been reluctant, but I think she's there mentally, which, you know, I don't want to put her in the plan if she's not going to play ball anyway. Then the second one is coconut oil. This is kind of really simple. Coconut oil, refined or unrefined, does it make a difference?
It does make a difference in two ways. One, we always want our food as close to its natural state as possible. So we always want things that are unrefined, raw, less processed. So the virgin coconut oil that's solid at room temperature is what you're looking for. That's a very lightly processed product. The refined coconut oils are more heavily processed. They use more heat. And the other big difference is that virgin coconut oil tastes like coconut, and it will add that coconut flavor to everything you either cook with it or put it in. And that can bother some people. They just don't like that taste. The refined coconut oil has no taste. So I do prefer the virgin, unrefined, but if somebody just says, look, I just can't handle that taste, then you can look for the refined, look for good, the best quality you can find and that kind of thing. But that's the major difference. We want the food as close to whole as possible, but when it comes to coconut oil, some people just don't like that taste.
Okay, well, I'm good on the unrefined and the taste and all that. My mom was trying to help out, and she bought a big old tub, and she read it to me over the phone, and it said refined, and I said, no, that's not what, that's not
right.
What I asked, to get, so.
Right.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm good. I think we're probably about 2 weeks away from, I'm going to go ahead and order that, what did you call it, Hydrazyme?
Hydrazyme, yeah.
Yeah, Hydrazyme. Because if we up her HCL and kind of double it, she'll be ready for that by the time it gets here, probably.
Yeah, we're just finding that a lot of people, if they don't respond to the HCL, they respond really well to the Hydrazyme. You know, this is one of those areas where if we were doing the functional evaluation, the hands-on physical examination, we can test the supplements to see what people respond better to. When we're doing the remote consulting, we kind of use a trial and error method, and it works. You know, we try one, see what kind of results we get, try another one, and just tweak it. So, in this model, you may end up buying a couple extra supplements till you get the right one, but you're also not paying for that hands-on physical evaluation. So, that's how that works. Let's get to some calls. Let's head off to Ohio. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I got a couple of questions. I hear you talk about grass-fed beef all the time. What about pork? Is there something negative about eating pork?
No, what we want to look for in pork is what's called pastured pork. We still don't want those factory-raised, pigs will eat anything. Pigs are omnivores.
Right.
They will eat just about anything. And because of that, when you go to these factory farms and you find out what they're feeding those animals, it is horrendous. Garbage and candy and it's just awful what they feed them because they'll eat anything. So what we want is a much more responsible, sustainable, we want pastured pigs that are running around out in the wild and they're rooting up, tubers and bugs and all the other stuff they eat, and they're living and eating a natural diet. And that's, we don't say grass-fed because pigs don't eat grass, but we will say pastured. That's kind of what you're looking for. Now, finding pastured pork in the store is almost impossible. You may find some if you go to some place like Whole Foods. So it's grass-fed, grass-finished is becoming very popular in stores. It's getting easier and easier to find. When it comes to pork and chicken, and we want pastured, that's almost always still going to be local or mail order. So I have a couple places like U.S. Wellness Meats, Slanker Grass-Fed Meats in Texas, that I order pork from. And there's a couple other things with pork. Like at Slanker Meats, they do what's called omega-3 pork. So they feed their pigs a very specific diet that increases the level of omega-3, which is really what we're after. So that's kind of a very healthy raised pork, but they also supplement like flax into the diet to produce more omega-3. They do that with chicken as well. So at Slanker, you can buy, it's called omega-3 pork and omega-3 chicken. So that's really in pork and chicken. Let me get to a break. I'll come back to you right after this. That's what we're looking for, is that term pastured. And, you know, we sometimes you got to do a little more research and find out what their diet really is. There's also, well, we'll talk about it when we get back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the calls. I was talking with Jeff in Ohio. So, Jeff, there's a couple other things on pork. You'll also see things like heritage breeds. So I do try to look for heritage breeds, but you still want them raised properly. The difference there is when we went into the whole low-fat thing and then they did that whole campaign, pork, the other white meat, they started hybridizing and breeding the pigs to be very, very lean. And that's why pork chops are so dry. There's just not enough fat on pigs anymore. So if you go to these heritage breeds, Berkshire and some of those, you get a much fattier, rich pork that the taste is just amazing. So that's what you're looking for on pork and chicken.
Okay, well, I found a sausage that I've been using that's got very little of anything in it. It's got pork, water, salt, garlic, and spices, which include white pepper, red pepper, black pepper, celery, or paprika, celery powder, and dried onion, and less than a gram of sugar.
That's excellent.
It also says no artificial ingredients, minimally processed, gluten-free, no MSG, no nitrates, and pork raised without added hormones.
That's a good sausage. I would eat that. That's the kind of stuff I look for. Now, that may not be real top-of-the-line pastured pork, but that's a really good sausage. And good sausage is hard to find. Most of it's got all kinds of garbage in it, and MSG and wheat fillers and all kinds of crap. So that's a well-raised pork. They didn't use hormones, so that's better than, you know, just pure factory-raised. And that's a good, clean pork sausage recipe. So I would stick with that.
Okay. And I had a truck question. I've got temperature issues. I've got a temperature gauge in my truck that reads ambient temperature inside and out. Whenever the ambient temperature outside is above 80 degrees, my engine fan kicks on and off. Sometimes it's, you know, you can gauge when it's going to do it. And sometimes it just randomly does it. But I'm wondering if that's not an ECM program with the temperature being over 80 degrees. Is that likely, or I think that's a sensor?
It could be a lot of things, and we need to determine whether or not the engine's just getting that hot or not. The engine may be getting hot enough that the fan needs to come on.
The temperature gauge doesn't go over 180, and the fan's on and off and on and off. When the temperature outside is below 80, when the temperature gets up around 200, the fan comes on by itself, which is kind of normal for the trucks I've driven in the past.
Now, here's the other problem. You know, a fan seems like a fairly simple problem to troubleshoot. This is one of the more difficult issues. There's so many factors that can cause that fan to come on and off. A bad fan clutch, a bad fan clutch switch, too much head pressure in the air conditioning system. The air compressor can cause this. The ECM can cause it. Sensors can cause it. So it does sound like this isn't a true temperature problem, but something else that's causing the fan to come on and off. And all you can do is just get in and start troubleshooting some of the more common causes until you find it. Let's go to Missouri. Fred, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. What can I help you with
today?
Phone
call. Yeah, did you have fun coming over the cabbage?
It was pretty clear last night. We're actually in Idaho Falls. We swung up here to pick up one of our other business partners. So we'll be pulling out of Idaho Falls today. Should be into Louisville probably tomorrow evening sometime.
Yeah, it's a daggone shame. I was up there last week. I could have raced you up Elk Mountain if I was still up there, you know. But hey,
I will tell you that the first trip we took in this coach after we bought it was out 84. Going up Cabbage was painful. I was down to like 34 miles an hour. This trip, because I have the Pittsburgh Power Tune on here now, I had to slow down for the corners going up Cabbage.
Wow. Well, sounds like money well invested then.
That's right.
Anyway, hey, I want to get with you, Kevin. About a month ago, I talked to you. So since I've talked to you, we put $16,000 in this 2011 ProStar. We put a new EGR cooler, redid the head, some other stuff, and a couple of tires. And what I want to ask you about is I still got a lot of white smoke coming out the stack when I'm in a pool. Or like when I first, I've got to idle the truck all night long because I wear a CPAP machine. I don't have a tri-pack or anything else on here, so I idle the truck all night. But I just noticed in the morning, every time I take off, you know, I get a lot of white smoke, and you can hear that burner kick in, you know, and before you know it, the little yellow lights, you know, about, I guess, you know, where it's doing a burn off. And I think I've put a gallon of oil in this thing since I left a week ago last Saturday, went to California, Reno, you know, into Missouri, and I'm headed back for the Midwest now. I put a gallon of oil in it. You know, since then, no more antifreeze, but I'm still getting a lot of white smoke and a lot of reduced power. You know, when you're going through the gears, it's real slow and kind of it surges sometimes. I'm wondering if I need to look at injector cups or go ahead.
Which engine is this?
Oh, it's the ISX Cummins.
It is an ISX, okay. Have you done an oil sample recently?
You know what? I don't think we have. I'm going to do a super PM service when I get back over here to Indiana here later on, and I might see if I can get an oil sample taken there when I get over that way.
Yep. When are you going to be there?
I'll be there tomorrow. Well, actually, I'll be back in Southwest Indiana this evening, and I'll probably do the go ahead and have Bosselman do the PM service sometime tomorrow.
Okay. I was going to say, if you had time, if you order the oil sample kit from our site, then we have access to the results. But if you're going to be there tomorrow, just go ahead and use whatever oil sample they use, and then you can just send us a copy of it if you want to call, and I'll go over it with you. But I would start there before I try troubleshooting anything. Let's see if we're getting any coolant in the oil. And we're going to be able to tell that from a sample. But that rather than waste a bunch of time and money trying to go find this, let's do the oil sample and see if that's where it's going, because that would really shorten the time it takes to find the problem.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Okay. I tell you what, can you put me back on hold and Alicia, whoever pick up, that way I can find out, you know, what I need to do to get that sent to you?
Okay, we'll do. I'll put you back on hold. Bridget will pick up. She's screening today, and she'll get you all taken care of. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Hey, I called a couple of weeks ago. I had a problem with my fuel tanks not leveling out equally.
Yeah.
I went through the basics. I changed the breather valves. I changed the O-rings in the caps. Then I changed the fuel lines. I changed the diverter valve for the return and the T-fitting for the supply. And I'm still getting my passenger side fuel tank is still getting empty, and my driver's side is still halfway full. And I'm kind of stumped on where to go from here.
Ah, boy, you know what? This is another one of those problems, almost like the fan clutch. Seems like a really simple issue, but this is one of those where I've had this call 30 times, I'll bet, where people go through the exact same thing you're going through. Sometimes it's drop-dead simple. You clean a vent and it stops doing it. Other times change the crossover. The other option, and you might want to call John at Pittsburgh Power. John has said that he gets so frustrated when this happens that he just puts in a straight crossover. He just eliminates what's there. He says because he's had somewhere he does what you've done, and you can't find the problem. So you may want to think about trying that, but give him a call. He may be able to give you an idea. Or if you want to call tomorrow on the Power Hour, we could talk to him then, and he may have some more ideas for you. But I'm kind of stumped where you are right now. If I would have done everything you've done, I wouldn't know exactly where to go other than to create another simplified crossover between the tanks. All right, there's the music. I've got to get out of here. We will see you next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thanks for joining me, everybody. We'll see you next time.